In today's video, you learn how a new diversity, equity, inclusion study can improve your DE&I and social impact programs. We explore the current state of DE&I in the workplace and what's changed during the pandemic. We also look at key challenges and findings from the report. Let's make a social impact. Hi, everyone. I'm Carl. Welcome to the Social Impact Show, a channel where you get the latest strategies and tips to help you scale and grow your CSR and goodness programs. So today I've got two special guests. My first guest, she's my guest co-host today. Her name is Tiffany. She runs a diversity, equity, inclusion community with over 200 professionals and has a personal interest in today's topic. And our guest today, her name is Sona Khosla. She is the Chief Impact Officer with Benevity and host of the amazing Speaking of Purpose podcast. Thank you both for joining me today.
Thanks for having us, Carl.
So today's topic is on diversity, equity, inclusion, and really specifically around the release of the report of the DE&I report by Benevity. But before we go into that, so Sona, in your opinion, what is the state of diversity, equity, inclusion in the workplace today? And maybe let's put a little context to it. You know, a lot has happened since the beginning of the pandemic and to where it is now. So where do you think it's evolved over that time?
Yeah, you know, I think, first of all, DEI is not new, right? It's been around since the 1960s, but it's definitely had heightened awareness since really the pandemic and then the murder of George Floyd. And of course, in reaction to that, or maybe in response to that, we saw so many statements coming out from companies, so many investments made in DEI leadership or DEI programs or in nonprofits who are helping to drive greater racial or social equity in their communities. And so it was this incredible kind of explosion around DEI. And then, of course, also in kind of just human consciousness, we all became aware of things that we hadn't necessarily, you know, been thinking about as front of mind. You know, these things that we knew were vaguely true, potentially in the background, you know, came right to the forefront. And so I think a lot of us think very differently about this in all of our interactions in the day to day. You know, you look at things differently now. I look at the world differently now. So a massive explosion in the consciousness around this. And of course, then companies investing in it, changing their hiring practices, doing goal setting, standing up for major issues, you know, responding to crises and injustices towards certain groups in more vocal and public ways. But with the economic changes that came in the latter part of 2022, what we started to see was, you know, some companies had to reassess everything, all of their budgets, their business survivability was on the line. And so everything, including DEI, was looked at. And, you know, as companies undertook layoffs, you know, one of the challenges is that first in, first out kind of approach. And so what that meant was that a number of new diverse hires who were coming in were also let go. So we know for a fact that diverse populations were disproportionately impacted through layoffs. But we also know that many organizations also scaled back their internal investments in DEI, whether that was through the reduction or, you know, changes in roles around DEI or the amount of resources that they had. And I would say that, you know, it's not like this wasn't happening in other functions. Of course it was. It's just kind of harder to swallow when it comes to DEI after a period where, you know, all these companies are saying they really care about it. And I think the question becomes, well, in hard times, we start to really see, do you care about it? And are you putting your money where your mouth is? And so that's kind of, you know, the state of workplace DEI today is it's in flux, and it's very different company to company now, depending on where companies made those decisions to stay the course and where companies said, we actually can't afford to do that at this time and have had to find other ways to invest or simply reset kind of their own momentum around it.
You know, I was interviewing another guest, Jerome Tenniel, and one of his points where he was saying that the state of DE&I, in his opinion, is there's a bit of turmoil. And one of his main points was that maybe it went too fast for a lot of businesses where they were hiring and they were creating practice, creating change, but maybe it wasn't sustainable change where they didn't actually have a comprehensive, well drawn out sustainable plan where maybe if they had, this would be more sustainable, like you said, to persevere through the economic challenges that we have now, then, well, maybe is it really an important piece of the business?
I think that's a really astute point by Jerome. And what I would say is that, you know, a lot of companies were reacting to the situation, and so didn't necessarily know what those commitments meant in terms of investing and executing, but I think also how long it actually takes to move the needle in these areas. Oftentimes, this is generational change because you're changing people's minds and you're changing pretty entrenched social and racial inequities that, you know, you can't just set a goal in a company for a 12-month timeframe and think you're really going to make the change. And so I think there has been a lot of learning amongst organizations about what it really takes to move the needle and how hard it actually is. And so those companies who are committed to doing the hard work and have the resource to do it will continue. And those who are like, okay, this is all we can afford to do now, and this is all we can afford to invest in, and we're going to still try to make progress, but in these ways, they've had to make those decisions. But I think it's an astute point that the ability to digest the investments that they made may not have been there because it was mostly done in reaction without really a full understanding. And I will say, like, even though DEI in and of itself is not new, the discipline in the corporate setting is fairly new and still really being shaped and understood. And so I think the role of the DEI leader is in helping companies understand that. I think that also was like, okay, we hired a bunch of DEI leaders, realized what it actually takes, and then didn't now, you know, it's like, oh, wow, we made these commitments, but this is all we can really do. And that's a tough spot, but that's the reality.
For sure. And let's shift to more the public perception, because I think, you know, mainstream media, social media, you're seeing, I don't know if you're seeing necessarily a backlash, but maybe a little bit pushback against diversity, equity, inclusion. So how has public perception changed over the same time frame? And, you know, what are some of the things that caused it to evolve?
Great question, Carl. You know, I would say public perception has changed. Like I was saying earlier, you know, a lot of us look at the world differently. When we walk into a place, we notice, you know, who is there and who is not there. You know, I do think that a lot of us have kind of really brought the consciousness to front of mind, which is great. It's on our minds. It's a lens that we look at, you know, when we're reading books and we notice that they constantly refer to CEOs as men, we're like, hey, that's kind of noticeable now. Or if there are case studies that don't include people of color, we notice that now. So it's in everything we do, and we look at the world differently. We actually recently launched the State of Workplace DEI report by Benevity Impact Labs. And what was interesting, and it's this actually kind of goes a little bit against what you were suggesting, Carl, which is, you know, there's some backlash happening, is we actually saw amongst employees across all demographic dimensions that appetite is actually heightened for DEI in the workplace. So what we learned through that study was that the vast majority, so 95% of employees, now weigh a prospective employer's DEI efforts when choosing between job offers with similar salary and benefits. So all things being equal, your commitment to DEI is actually going to be the tipping point between a decision about whether you get that candidate or not. And that's 95% of employees. That is staggering. That tells me that as much as we say only some people care about DEI, that's probably not true. The other really fascinating stat that we came across was that 78% of employees agreed that they would not consider working for a company that fails to commit significant resources to prioritizing DEI initiatives. So again, that's the flip side. They're really assessing your company, whether I'm going to join based on this. And I'm also saying I would never consider working for a company that fails to commit. So on both ends, companies are really seeing kind of similar strong sentiment. And then finally, what we also saw around kind of customer and employee trust was that 90% of respondents agree that companies with strong DEI commitments are actually more trustworthy, both to customers and employees. So really powerful testament to the value and the importance of DEI to employees today?
You know, what's fascinating is that, like you mentioned before, how, you know, over the past years, not just public perception, but the state of DEI in the workplace has changed, where, you know, a lot of the times, I guess, when you're looking for positions, or maybe a younger generation is looking for positions, it's no longer just about salary or, you know, like the benefits, but it's like, hey, is that organization, is that business that I'm going to be, you know, giving my life to the next 3, 5, 10 years, whatever it is, does it actually serve something more than what that business, you know, is intended to do, or make profit or make revenue or so on? Like, I think what's interesting about that is, like, people are looking for a little bit more purpose, not just in their lives, but in what they do and who they work for.
Oh, totally. It's, no one's going to choose to work for an employer that clashes with their values anymore. We used to compartmentalize. I go to work, I do my thing at work. So totally separate from what I do in my personal life. Those two things have fully integrated now. And so absolutely, people are choosing to work with companies where they can bring their values to work. They're no longer just adopting the values of the company. It's like, no, I expect the company to match my values. And so that's across multiple things. It's across DEI, it's across environmental impact. It's across social impact. Can I live my purpose at work? So absolutely, Carl, it's just a completely different criteria for judging where you're going to choose to work now. And that's why, you know, truly authentically purpose-driven brands have such a massive competitive edge, and why it's risky actually in a volatile economy to pull back on that, because it is such a core part of the criteria now.
And remember, if you're getting value from this video, we'd really appreciate you hitting that like button. So the question for you today is, how has diversity, equity, inclusion in the work in your workplace changed? If so, how? Let us know in the comment section below.
Sona, I'd honestly love to get your perspective on what you think some of the challenges are that are facing advancing DEI in the workplace. And if you have any advice on, like, what companies can do to actually combat that a little bit.
Yeah, good question, Tiffany. I think we touched on one of them earlier, which is around resources. These are very thinly resourced teams. And then we've also seen scale backs in both internal budgets around resourcing, as well as external budgets, hiring trainers or consultants or facilitators around this. So that's been one big challenge. The other big challenge is actually fear of polarization. You know, so companies don't want to alienate certain populations by pushing too hard, too fast, or raising really uncomfortable questions in the workplace. And so it's leading to this little bit of paralysis and the maintenance of status quo, which I think is actually a huge threat. But what's really interesting is the State of Workplace DEI report highlighted that 90% of respondents said that they have actually personally benefited from DEI initiatives at work. And I'll be honest, that stat floored me. I didn't expect that. And so as I started to think about, well, why is that? I think, first of all, it's because when we tend to talk about DEI, we tend to think about historically excluded groups, like certain people of different races or different ethnicities or sexual orientation or gender. But actually, diversity is much more broad than that. It's your ability, it's your veteran status, it's your citizenship, it's your first language, it's whether you're a caregiver, whether you're a parent. And so there's multiple dimensions. So when you think about diversity in that way, you suddenly go, wait a minute, all of us are completely different. We all have dimensions of diversity amongst us. We are diverse. That is the point. And so it doesn't surprise me then when you think about that, that 90% of people say they've actually benefited from diversity initiatives. So, you know, I think that what's really important for companies then is to make sure that whatever they're doing is very authentic, and that they are truly kind of committed to thinking about how they can create an inclusive culture. Because what this says is, if they create an inclusive culture for some, it'll actually create a better culture for all. And so that's, I think that mindset is really important. The other thing I would say is that the power of storytelling, I think, really came through since 2020. You know, we saw a number of companies hosting very difficult conversations, and, you know, people from historically excluded or underrepresented groups sharing their personal stories. And what we know is those personal stories can actually depoliticize some of these topics, and they make them real. When you find out that your Black colleague has had these lived experiences, it's pretty hard to think that, well, that's not true when they're sitting there and telling you what their experience was. And you know, we tend to have more empathy or at least more openness towards people who are more proximate to us. And so I think that that's really powerful. So investing in storytelling, and a lot of that storytelling is coming out of employee resource groups or ERGs. And so I think that what we've seen is that companies, you know, have really traditionally spent most of their DEI dollars in consultants, training, which is still really important. But the other piece is really around empowering these ERGs, because the other thing that we know is that research shows that storytelling has actually got a longer efficacy rate in changing people's minds than training does. You know, your trainer leaves and your people said that was a great session, and you know, it stays with them for a bit, but actually storytelling stays with them much longer. And if you build an opportunity for ERGs to be able to, you know, tell their stories and champion these points of view throughout the year, you know, with using maybe awareness dates as peak points, it actually becomes like a drumbeat in the organization. And you start to really get the sense of all these different lived experiences and can really start to build empathy and understanding and allyship through that. And so it's interesting. I wasn't surprised then to see that 91% of employees that we surveyed said that ERGs actually have a greater impact on inclusivity than traditional DEI and unconscious bias training.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because while you were speaking about that, like the point about like 90% of people feel they benefited from DEI initiatives at work, like I know for me personally, I join every ERG event that is hosted because I find that like the power of storytelling is really there. Like it can change your perspective. So do you feel like maybe those go hand in hand a little bit, like kind of the rise of like the prominence of ERGs and just because it's not necessarily just for members of marginalized community, right? Like they're really there to build that allyship and kind of like spread it a bit further through the organization. Like are those quite tied, do you think, like the rise in that and just kind of how things are moving with DEI?
Yeah, I do. I mean, ERGs definitely, again, exploded after 2020. But I think it's really important to first acknowledge that the role of ERGs is primarily focused on the groups with the shared lived experiences and identities and creating belonging for them. That is actually their number one goal. Like the weight of building an education and building awareness and helping allies, like that can't be all on these groups also. And so I'd say that's a secondary benefit and a secondary focus to belonging. I think the most important thing is that we can do is just enable these communities to thrive, because we know when you've got camaraderie and belonging, you're much more likely to be productive. You're much less likely to be absent. You're much more likely to grow in your role and stay with that company. And so so I think making sure that ERGs, the burden of everything isn't on them, but it is a really nice secondary benefit that they can build understanding, empathy, and allyship.
Yeah, that's a great point. And then maybe to just shift gears a little bit, where do you think that DEI can really progress over the next, say, 3 to 5 years?
That's a big question, Tiffany. You know, I think that over the last number of years, we've been focused on diversity and inclusion to some extent as well. The equity piece is the piece that's really kind of coming into focus now. And so I think, you know, a lot about... you know, we're based in Canada. And so one of the big issues here is around reconciliation with Indigenous peoples. And one of the things I absolutely have taken from as a learning from that work is starting with truth. That is the most important piece. We cannot change until we all have a shared understanding of the truth. So truth is actually one of the most important things. And that means we have to remain open to hearing things that counter our current beliefs and truths. And so it starts with truth. From there, you can move into justice when you start to understand that, wait a minute, there's been historical and systemic oppression of certain groups that have been built into our laws and our systems that are continuing to have ripple effects today. And so then you start to think about justice and then equity, which is, okay, now what are we doing to actually lift those impacted people out of those situations and out of those circumstances that were, you know, outside of their control, were imposed on them unjustly. And so I really think it is going to be about truth, justice, and equity. And And I think that what we have to make sure is that in a company and in a world that we're ready to do that work for ourselves. And I think the challenge is that it's DEI leaders who have to bear the brunt of a lot of that education, that weight in their company. And so what I would say is one of the most important things for DEI to progress is that you need leadership teams who are truly invested in the development and understanding for themselves that cannot be carried by the DEI leader alone. DEI leaders need allies at the leadership level, at the executive level, who care enough to do their work to carry it through the organization and in their own functions. Otherwise, it can be an unbearable burden that leads to burnout for DEI. The other thing I would say is that I really think we do need to tease out DEI from overall HR and employee engagement, because employee engagement is looking at your entire population. It's going to prioritize the majority by nature of the fact that most of our companies have more majority populations. And so I think you actually have to tease out those historically excluded groups and look at them and say, we are actually going to prioritize them, even though, you know, they don't represent the majority. And that's the piece around advancing equity, to me, is saying this population actually deserves our attention and deserves interventions that allow them to succeed that are different from the majority. And that's really hard for HR teams to really embrace, because it means, you know, they're not using their resources for, quote unquote, the biggest impact on the largest population size. But that's, I think, a core decision. It's why you're starting to see CDOs actually become the leaders, the top level executive, because they're bringing that lens into all of the work around their people function and culture and experiences. And then finally, I'd say, you know, we saw ERGs explode in 2020, but in 2021, and they're continuing to grow. But that will be unsustainable if they don't have scalable tools to drive a continued membership and growth and engagement. And so really starting to think about how do you scale ERGs, whether that's through investment in leadership, investment in budgets to run events, technology to enable employees to discover and engage with, you know, people with shared identities who aren't in the same office, and this hybrid remote work context, having a digital platform and a place for them to convene is really powerful. And I think that companies, as they scale those bottoms-up initiatives, they can't forget to do the top-down. It's an and. They absolutely have to do both, because, again, there's risk in putting the work on the ERGs to do the work of DEI in a workplace, and that's also not fair. And so companies have to walk the walk on their own front in terms of making sure that compensation, performance management, recruitment practices all are generating the positive outcomes on DEI as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because as Carl mentioned, I host an ERG discussion group, and those are the things that continually come up, is engagement's a struggle. And it seems like you can only really find that success when you've got like the leadership buy-in and everyone kind of working towards the same goal and like towing that line between asking your marginalized communities to advance all the DEI, because it's not, you know, like putting more on them. So it's a really interesting world. There's no one size fits all approach for sure. So it's very cool.
So our next set of questions is really focused on providing the quick takeaways for our audience to help with their programs. So my first question is, what's one takeaway from the State of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion report from Benevity that a reader, you know, really wants, if a reader, you know, didn't read it, what's one thing that they need to grasp from that report?
The most important thing is that 90% of employees have personally benefited from DEI initiatives. If there is nothing else you take away, that's important, because what it tells us is that when we design our workplaces for some, we actually build a better culture for all. And so it's not a zero-sum game here where some people benefit and some people don't. The data tells us that everyone benefits. And so don't believe the news about, you know, the backlash and the polarization. The data says that, you know, the vast majority of employees benefit from this work. And so as you're thinking about it from a resource perspective, if you can actually move the needle for 90% of your employees, why wouldn't you?
Remember, if you want a copy of this report, we'll leave it in the description. So second question is, if somebody was starting a diversity, equity, inclusion program in their workplace, What's one thing that they should look at above anything else?
I think it's important that you're walking the walk on two fronts. One is that you are continuing to invest from a top-down perspective, that your leadership is genuinely investing in the areas that will move the needle in your organization. So whether that is recruiting, whether that is performance, whether that's pay equity, making your benefits, right? Making sure that the company is actually tackling the gaps in systemic inequity in the business, while also fostering a culture of belonging. And that's where really investing in the grassroots organizations, these affinity groups or ERGs, who really bring the culture and the lived experiences to life in much more of an emotive, celebratory sometimes, awakening or enlightening way, but in a much more impactful way. They really form the the day-to-day experiences that your employees have. And that's what shapes your culture just as much as the top down. So I would say you have to make sure that you're thinking about top down, bottoms up when it comes to DEI.
So is there anything else you'd like to add in terms of our conversation about diversity, equity, inclusion in the workplace?
Yeah, I think, it's easy to get down with this work. When you lead this work, it's really personal. You do it because you care a lot or because you've had personal experiences. And so it's really easy to get down with this work and get really jaded and burnt out, frankly. And so what I would say is that for all those DEI leaders out there, first of all, you're not alone. There are DEI leaders in many, many companies. Reach out, make sure you have a support network who can hold you. I think, like the ERG group that Tiffany leads is a great example of that. The other piece is that this work takes time. We're talking about changing hundreds of years history. So you're not going to do it in a year. And so to set that up as your success measure is kind of setting yourself up for disappointment and burnout. So this is generational change. But the question to ask is, how can you accelerate this change, even just a little bit? We don't want to leave it to just organic time. We need to accelerate it. So what can we do to accelerate it? Recognizing that this is generational change.
So Sona, we could talk with you and Tiffany for the next couple hours and days with the amount of interest in this topic. But if somebody in our audience or our audience wants to connect with you, what's the best place to reach you?
I'm on LinkedIn, Sona Khosla.
Thank you for listening to The Social Impact Show. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Then visit benevity.com to access some of the resources mentioned in this episode, along with tons of other insights to help you grow your program. Music provided by Ikeson. For questions or topics you want us to cover, reach us at podcast@benevity.com. Until next time, be a force for good.